Okay, so we are holding on Lamed Hey, Lamed Beis, about the two dots, seven lines from the top. The Mishnah said, Cheskosin Shalosh Shanim Yom LeYom V'Chol. The Mishnah had listed a bunch of things, which Oisin Peiros Todir was the general thing about them, that these are all things that produce Peiros on a constant basis. Houses, for example, you live in them or rent them out or whatever. Beis HaShochen, which can produce crops all year round. Avodim, etc., etc. So we said the chazaka of them is 3 years miyom liyom, 3 years exactly from three full calendar years. Amar Ababa, idoli leib ihu gufit son of the peri. However, if he picked up and gave him a basket of fruit, la alter have a chazaka. Then it's me, and then it's an immediate chazaka. Who's the he? Who gave to who? The Rashbam brings two possibilities. One is it means, and of course it has to be the Ra'edim, is that the Ma'arer, the one who is now claiming, wait a minute, this field belongs to me. If we have Edim, hello, that previously he picked up a basket of fruit that grew on this land and put it on the shoulders of this Machzik, then he has no claim. Then the other guy has a Chazaka immediately. He doesn't even have to wait 3 years, because then obviously the fact that he did it obviously shows that he genuinely sold him the field. Then the Rashbam brings another explanation, which he doesn't like as much, which he says the other way around. If you have Edim, that the Lekeach, that the Machzik now, gave a basket of fruit to the owner of the land. Well, why would he be accepting such a gift if it weren't for the fact that the field taken no longer belongs to him? Otherwise, he would say, if according to the second explanation, the Lekeach, the one who bought the field, takes a basket of fruit from the field and presents it as a gift to the guy he bought it from. And if we have Edim of that, then the argument goes, then that shows, again, he must have sold the field. Otherwise, he should be saying, I don't need your favors. Don't be giving me a basket of fruit when the whole field belongs to me. Okay, the Rashbam says he doesn't like that explanation as much. However, Amar of Zvid being Tan v'Amal Peiros Herad Ivnemon. However, then, what if the Ma'arer were to counterclaim and say, okay, but all I did is I sold him the Peiros of this Karka. I didn't sell him, or so I sold him the Peiros of the Karka, or I made him an artist or whatever. Not sold him the Peiros. No. In other words, fine. They come to Beis Din. He's saying, my body's by Ara. The other guy says, I bought it from you. Edim come and say that the Ma'arer previously gave him a basket of fruit, or the other way around, the Lekeach gave a basket of fruit to the Ma'arer or whatever. If the Ma'arer is going to claim that he's only supposed to be in the field as an oris, he's only supposed to be in the field as an oris, and therefore fine, he's entitled to a certain percentage of the fruit, Neman, then we believe him. Because that's a valid claim. He didn't necessarily sell him the whole field. Why am I giving him a basket of fruit, or why is he giving me a basket of fruit, as the case may be? Fine, that's part of his portion. But that doesn't mean that he owns the whole field and all the fair. Fine, it shows that he's an artist, but it doesn't show that he owns the actual field, which is what the other guy's claiming.
It's just the opposite.
What do you mean it's just the opposite? The Machzik is claiming I own the entire field. I bought it from you, Minoch Zav Zavni.
Right.
He's counterclaiming and saying, fine, you have a right to be in this field, you have a right to take some payers from it, but not all of it. You're only an artist. You didn't actually buy it.
That's what Moshe should say. He's the opposite. He's the renter, not
right,
the
right, right, right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't know that. I misunderstood. Okay. Yeah. Okay. However, the honey really is sholosh. However, that only works if it's within the first 3 years. Because, again, you're supposed to hold on. You're supposed to hold on to your shtar. If you really bought it and you don't have a shtar, that's your problem. But after 3 years, then we don't believe him anymore to say Lepeiros Hedam. Because again, you can't expect the guy to hold on to his shtar that long. And if you really did, if it was Lepeiros Hedam, if it really was that he's only an artist or that he sold him the fruit or whatever rather than the actual karka, you should have been Moicha at some point. Okay.
There's no public records.
Not necessarily. If there are public records, right, then obviously there's nothing to talk about. But the assumption. The assumption throughout all of these sugyas is that there's no central records office where all this stuff is kept. There's individual, people write ad hoc between themselves the shtar. There's no central repository of it. Yeah.
Let me ask you a question in the future. Good question. What you're asking. When there is records,
then you just go look at the records.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
If the chazaka contradicts the records.
Kol chazaka she'eni mataina in a chazaka. If you don't have
taina, okay, with the taina.
So what kind of taina do you have? If you have reason to argue that the records are missing for some reason, there was a fire, let's say, or whatever, fine. If not, I don't know. I mean, lechora, it also gets into the question of dinah de malchusa. You know, under dinah de malchusa nowadays, if there's no record of a land sale, then you don't really have. You don't really have any proof that you own the place. I don't know. I mean, they also do.
My question is: every time you hire an artist, you know, most managers, you know, people, they're investors. You're not gonna manage the property. You're gonna hire an artist. So every piece of property that you own, you constantly have.
That's what they say. Hold on. That's what Rav Ashi is actually gonna ask right now. Very good. If he just brought him as an artist, what is he supposed to do? On the face of it, the assumption for purposes of the question is that lechura machal. We're going to learn later on in the parak when we talk about what exactly machal consists of. It consists of going in front of Beis Din and saying, "Look, this guy is in this land illegally. He's a gazlan or whatever. I'm asserting my rights. Eventually, I plan to actually take him to Beis Din and get it back." What are you supposed to do over here, lechura? If you just say the peiris heradiv, the assumption for purposes of the question is that's not a machal. So what are you supposed to do? Amalei and Rav Ashi and Rav Kahana tells him yes, ibori le machoyit. Yes, as a matter of fact, he should be moicha. Obviously, not saying that he's a gazlan, but he should be saying le peiris heradiv. Yes, he should go in front of Beis Din at some point during the 3 years and say le peiris and make it clear le peiris heradiv.
So in other words, you're saying every time you hire anybody, you have to
at some point.
You have to file it with Beis Din and say, yeah. This is a manager.
Yeah.
Every single okay.
Yeah. That you say Laperis Heratu. And also it has to be that there can't be 3 years between one such machah and the next for the same reasons we said before. Right. So yeah, well, if you hire the guy as an artist for 10 years, then yeah, every 3 years you'll come to Beis Din and inform them you should know this guy is only an artist. He didn't buy it from me.
To protect yourself
in the case
of
years. The Eloi Temahochi and Rav Kahana continues, if you're not going to say like that, if you're going to argue that a machah is not considered a machah unless you actually say that the guy is a gazlan and has no business being here at all, if you're going to argue like that, Hanim Mashkanta Desura, then consider what's going to happen in the case of Mashkanta Desura, which we talked about a couple of days ago. We also learned extensively in Bava Metzia that it's one of these arrangements where you... one person borrows money from another. He mortgages his field or house or whatever to field. Actually, it only works in the case of a field where there's variation in how much it'll produce every year. You arrange that every year a certain amount will be deducted from the loan based on the average amount that this field produces. And at the end of that time, the loan will be considered paid off, whether the guy had more or less or an equal amount of paid off. But it's not a land. He didn't sell the land. It's a mortgage. A land lease, basically, the mortgage. So we learned in Bava Metzia over there. It's not a sale though, because eventually he gets it back. The Mishlam Shnaya Ilan, the and in fact we write in the Shtar for Mashkanta Desura, the Mishlam Shnaya Ilan, at the end of these years of the Mashkanta, Tipuk Ara Dabla Kesef, this land will go out and be returned to the Loiva without any further payment. The loan will be considered paid off at that point. That's Mashkanta Desura. Yeah, you have to ask. You have to ask, Rav Kahana says to Rav Ashi, if you're going to argue that the only valid machah is to say the guy is a gazlan, he has no business being on this land, so he kovishle the shtar mashkanta gabe. Suppose that he were to hide the shtar mashkanta, somewhat similar to the case of Rav Bar Shaushum that we had the other day, and claim falsely that it's not a mashkanta, that I actually outright bought it. Are you
Rav Ashi going to think that
you could actually believe him with that? Can't. Misakni Rabbanan Midi Would the Rabbanan, who are the ones who came up with the Mashkanta Desura as a valid method of doing this without infringing on the Isurim of Ribis, would they have made such a takana that there should be such a thing as a Mashkanta Desura in a way where the loiva could end up having a hefsid, having an unwarranted hefsid? Because a mashkanta is usually longer than 3 years. It usually takes more than 3 years for the produce to even approximately equal the value of the debt.
Can you elaborate on that for a moment? You said that it's the means to circumvent the Isser of Ribbit.
Because, in Bava Metzia, in Ezer Neshech, the Gemara has the mission of the Mishnayos, and the Gemara over there have a long discussion about how you arrange such things to avoid the issue of Ribbit. If you were to do this with a house, for example, and you were to say, let's say, a house is something where there's a fixed income stream.
Sure.
So if you were to say, for example, that this if you were to try this kind of thing with that and say, for example, that this place is supposed to bring in rental income of 100 zuz a year. Therefore, after 10 years, the thousand zuzim loan will be paid off. The problem with that is that there's essentially little or no chance that it's going to produce less than that in a year. It can either produce that amount or more. Then you have a problem of ribis. There's a real possibility that he's going to end up getting more rental out of it than the amount, and therefore you're going to end up having a problem of ribis. He gained from it more than the amount.
Bezdin can't put a contingency that he would have to return additional revenue.
Then it gets complicated over there, because then the question is basically, can you collect ribis and then return it? Ribis amanas lahasir is called over there. So it's not so simple. But in the case of a field, there's no guarantee you're gonna get anything any particular year. You can have 1 year where there's a storm or some other kind of natural disaster or whatever, So therefore, even within that, there's various kinds of mashkantas that are and aren't allowed under various conditions. The one, because of problems of ribis, the one that's unequivocally allowed is mashkanta desura, the kind that we're discussing over here.
Well, that's because there's an uncertainty.
Because there's an uncertainty, and because you're saying that once the years have passed, there's no further payment needed. If not, we're not going to say, for example, that part of the loan is going to be considered paid off by the mashkanta, but there's still going to be a balance or whatever. No, we just say the whole thing is considered paid off, regardless whether he got the amount or less than the amount or more.
How do you get around the issue of, let's say, in the event that the investment does yield a greater return?
Doesn't matter.
Because
Mechila, but because there was the real possibility that it wouldn't.
In that sense,
it's somewhat similar to a Heter Iska. It's somewhat similar to a Heter Iska in the sense that with an Iska, you have also the possibility that the whole business may go belly up and you're not going to get back your investment, or at least you're not going to get back some large part of it.
Let me ask you a question. Do the odds have to be the same in both directions?
We talked about that in Bava Metzia. If you remember, we talked about that. It has to be karev lehefzid v'rachos l'schar. We learned over there. You have to have your possibility of gain is less than your possibility of loss. Or it has to be that the percentage that you stand to gain is less than the percentage that you stand to lose. We learned about it. We talked
about the definition of karev.
Yes. Well, that's the midravon anyway. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Okay. So the economy worked like this. They were all lending each other money totally from a good heart, without getting anything back for it. Except for that.
Unless for a mashkanta desura or an iska or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm saying mashkanta desura, I would do much better lending to a goy.
We learned over there actually in Bava Metzia also that a person who lends at ribis to goyim may be in trouble also. We learned over there that he may wind up that he earns a fortune from it, but he ends up having to give it away to Shabu Malka, to the king over there, takes it for taxes or welfare for the goyim or whatever. So yeah, because
why would I lend money anyway just to be good?
Yeah, but also because otherwise your money is whatever. Yeah, to be good, and also because otherwise your money is just sitting there idle anyway. Yeah. However, the Gemara explains over there that's not so simple, because there's a Gzeira over there that you don't want to learn from his Maisim. Therefore, we said there's an exception for a Talmid Chacham. So we learned
there.
No, they don't actually answer it, but there are certain conditions, and it is qualified. It's not such a simple thing. Anyway. Okay, all that's a side thing. The point is that Rav Kahana is saying to Rav Ashi, look, in a mashkanta desura, you don't have anything written in there. We don't find ever that there's a specific takana that we write in the shtar over there or something, or we write a separate shtar that the lawyer will be able to hold on to and say this shows that it was only a mashkanta. All you have is the shtar mashkanta itself. The malva who holds the mashkanta could easily hide that shtar. Wouldn't that bring a loss to the lawyer? Obviously, the Chachamim would never do such a thing. The answer is that within every 3 years, you do a machal and based. And again, you're not saying the guy's a goslin. He's not a goslin by any stretch of the imagination. However, you say, be aware that this is a disclaimer. This is a mashkanta. This is not a state. And if he doesn't, then tough luck on him. Therefore, the argument is, same thing by an artist. Yes, you put an artist in your field for years. Same thing. Within every 3 years, come to based in and make a disclaimer that the guy's an artist. I'm out of work.
Tough luck doesn't mean that he's giving over his field. It just means that
the other guy will now have a chazaka, and
it's like firing a chazaka by default.
Yeah. Okay. New din. Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav.
He doesn't have to do
it. Yisroel haba machmas akum hareyu ka'akum. If a Jew is coming via a goy, then he has the din of a goy for this purpose. Namely, like this. In other words, the Rashbam says, if you have a field that it's known that it used to belong to a yid, now you have a goy who was in possession of it for 3 years or more than 3 years. This goy claims that he bought it from a yid. So we know the field originally belonged to Reuven. For the last few years, this guy, John, has been in possession of it. Now John goes and sells it to Shimon. Shimon also had it, Shnei Chazaka. We're saying that Hareu Ka'akum. For this purpose, Shimon has the same dinim relative to the dinim of Chazaka as the guy. Ma Akum en la Chazaka el b'shtar. Just like the guy himself does not have Chazaka, rather he needs a shtar even after 3 years. Apistral, Abba Machmas Akum en la Chazaka el b'shtar. So it also is with a Jew who bought it from a guy that he has to have his shtar. What's the reason behind it, basically? The Rashbam says, like this. The Rashbam says the reason why a goy cannot be considered to have chazaka, he's a stam akum gazlonim heim, that your average goy is a gazlon, he didn't necessarily get the field legally. Why wasn't the yid moicha in him? Because he's afraid to. Okay, so there are achronim, we'll talk about what is that even achronim, actually we'll talk about if you're living in a country that has a functioning legal system, and if a goy steals the field, you will be able to take him to court. Do the same dinim apply? Not necessarily. But here we're talking about at a time when... there are different explanations among the Rishonim why we would say that a goy doesn't have chazaka. There's the one reason that the Rashbam is giving over here, because he may be a gazlan and the yid is too afraid to, the original yid, the original owner is too afraid to be mocha. There's other reasons also, such as, for example, that even when you have chazaka, there are times when you may have to do a shvuas hesed. A goy, you don't have the concept of shvuas hesed. Right. That whole concept only exists for the yid.
And this could never happen in Israel. I mean, how can you say that a yid could acquire chazaka through a goy?
No, we don't mean he acquires chazaka through a goy. But again, okay. Hold on. The other key thing that applies over here that Rashbam says is it has to be that the second yid is saying, I don't know how this goy comes to be in possession of this land. All I know is I bought it from him. Then we're saying he doesn't have a valid chazaka because it's a chazaka she'ini matayna. You don't have any reason to think that this goy validly ever owned this land. On the other hand, for example, if he buys it from another Jew, then as we've learned before, and as we're going to learn again in the rest of the parak, we're going to learn again later on in the parak, as long as that Jew in between had chazaka on the place, even for one day, then it's called toyan in the lekeach. We said before that we'll argue on behalf of the lekeach, on the bad behalf of the second lekeach, to say that he bought it validly from the first yid, since we have evidence that the one he bought it from actually lived on this property. But in the case where goy had the land, and we have no proof one way or the other how he came to be in possession of this land, we can't say that. So if the second yid says, for example, that As the Gemara is going to continue, if he says that the goy told me he bought it from you, for example, that would be enough. The ideal thing would be even more, that he actually, when he buys the land from the goy, he has the goy give him the original deed by which he bought it from the yid. That would be the ideal. But even if he only says that, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, even if he only says that the goy told me he bought it from you, that would also be good enough on the grounds of a migrant. But here we're talking about, the first case we're talking about over here, when we say Yisrael Abba Machmas Akum, is he's saying, I bought it from this goy. How did this goy come into possession of it? I have no idea. Not my business. Then we're saying that a chazaka is not good enough. You need a shtar.
That's even in Eretz Yisrael?
It doesn't matter. Eretz Yisrael or for chutzpah, it doesn't matter.
A shtar, like you said, a shtar that you bought.
A shtar that you bought.
The shtar that the original yid problem is
over. Right.
I guess so, yeah. Yeah.
Again, like you said, it's all kind of nothing.
Right.
Some Akam does one.
Yeah.
Rove Yisrael...
Ganevi. Yeah, okay.
Rav Ganevi Yisrael.
Yeah, Rav Ganevi Yisrael, yeah.
Rav Ganevi Yisrael.
Anyway, So okay, so going back to over here. Okay, anyway, there's other reasons. There's various other reasons that the Rishonim give anyway why the Yisrael might not be able to have a chazaka. But Sneh brings up a point that maybe the original Yisrael is not only afraid to be moicher in the goy, like the Rashbam says over here. Maybe he's also afraid to be moicher on the second yid as well. The Nesivus slugs that up and says that's not the reason why. But anyway. The Sneh also brings, by the way, another interesting thing, which again the Nesivus also argues on, which is if the goy was, he brings based on a Gemara later on in our Perek, that if the goy was in possession of the land for 40 years, then it is acceptable. 40. Then it is acceptable on the basis of a Gemara later on.
He'd
have to have some kind of proof, but if the guy was in possession of it for 40 years, it should be easy enough to find aid.
So that's chazaka for a goy.
So that would be, according to the Sneh, that would be sufficient chazaka for a goy, yeah. Okay.
40 generations.
Not 40 generations, 40 years. Okay. Omar Yisrael, however, if the Yisrael says, not like in the original case, he says, well, the goy had the property. I don't know where he got it from. Maybe he bought it legally, maybe not. If he says, the goy told me that he bought it from you, Meheman, then we do believe it. Because the fact that he thinks of making such a taina means he has a migui, therefore. He could have just as well argued, I bought it from you and I had it for Shnei Chazaka, therefore he has a migri. The Gemara asked why. Me ikamidi dilo akum oma loy meheman vilo oma yisro meshmei de akum meheman. What kind of thing is that? Where do you ever have a case where if a goy were to say something, we wouldn't believe him? But if a yid says that the goy told me this, then we should believe him? What's the svara? If the goy himself if the guy himself is saying I have chazaka, that doesn't count for anything without a shtar. Why is it any better if the Yisrael says it in the name of the guy?
But he has a migui, I thought. Does he not have a migui? It's dependent on the koyak that he's coming. He has a migui regardless.
But
he could have said minav zavner,
right?
Right. Now, regardless of that, his title of ownership comes through the guy. But why is that the make it or break it factor? His migui was not a migui?
Because the other claim that he has, because what a migui has to be, that there's two equally valid claims he could have made. But like this, if he were to claim, his claim that I bought it from the guy who says he bought it from you, is a worthless claim. So you can't use that as a basis for a migui that he could have instead said, I bought it from you. It's a chazaka sheni matina.
So what's his claim? Because
the guy has no ability to have chazaka without a shtar.
You're saying, yes, we believe his migui, but now that we believe his migui, we look at his actual taina, which is meaning.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Yeah.
Not that he lost the migui.
No, but I mean, the migui doesn't really help us anything, yeah.
It helps us believe him, but what's
Nothing. Yeah, okay. Ella Omar Rava, so no, rather, Rava says, rather, you have to say like this. If the second Yisrael says that I know for sure, for the Kamori Didi means in front of me, this guy bought it from you, and then later on he sold it to me, Meheman, then we would believe him. Now he's saying for sure I know, now he has a chazaka sheyesh limataina. Because now he has a proper migui where he could have said I bought it from you. Because now we're not relying on what the guy said. Now both halves of the taina are relying on something that Yisrael is saying, that he bought it from you, and then I bought it from him, or that I bought it from you directly. So that works.
That it wasn't under duress. Maybe you could tie in there. Yeah, I bought it. The guy forced me to buy it.
That'll be the concept of moja, which we're going to talk about later on in our para. That the other guy would have to moja before he sells. Yeah.
That was a valid sale. Halacha does not allow going to buy property.
No.
What was the Sukrikin?
Sukrikin was a case where a person is being threatened with death, and the guy tells him, you either sell me your field or I'll kill you.
What's the difference between that and Moda?
So, in that case, you can't do a Moda. You're in a situation where you're not able to be Moda. But since Moisa Moja, if you go to Beis Din ahead of time or after the fact, we'll see later on in the parak, whatever, and you tell them, you should know, this guy is forcing me to sell my field or my metalplin or whatever it is. I don't really want to. Be aware that I plan to exercise my rights against him at some point. But Sikarifin, obviously, you don't have the ability to do that. So therefore, they
because
have to have a special...
he would kill you by the time
yeah,
you...
But, yeah, because if you're going to go to be Moisa Moja, he's going to find out about it. So therefore, they have to have...
Kill you.
Yeah, so therefore, they have the special Fakono.
That was a tougher guy.
Yeah.
Contracts they have
that has to be under, Okay. Another din, the Omer of Yehuda. This din we had a couple of days ago. The Gemara is just repeating it over here in connection with, because we had a din of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, so here's another one. If you have somebody is holding a sickle and a tuvliya, we said over there that Rashbam said a tuvliya meant either a rope to climb up onto the tree or a basket to collect the food in. And he says, Ezel exidol adikla d'planya, and he says, I'm going to harvest the date from Pliny's palm tree, d'zabintamine, which I bought that fruit from him. Meheman, then we believe him, lechot to finish l'migzu dikla d'labdile, because a person does not have the chutzpah to chop off dates from a tree that's not his. So we talked about over there the pros and cons of it, what Tosfos said over there, that it only works, that first of all, what the Rashbam said, that it doesn't work with the other guy's mocha, and second of all, what Tosfos said, that it'll only work, that he'll be able to keep what he collects it until then, but if he wants to collect from now on, he's going to have to bring some kind of raya beyond that chazaka. Yeah.
And what people are actually capable of will shock you, so
know that. Yeah, that too, yeah. Okay. Yehuda. Somebody made a chazaka on the area outside of the aroid wall. So what is this? The Rashbam explains like this. You have places where the fields are very close. You have places where the fields are very close to an area where there's wild animals, or like very close to the forest or whatever. So you're gonna have wild animals go and invade the fields and eat everything. What do? You build a wall. But if you build a wall, fine. But the animals out there are still hungry. They're going to break through the wall. What you do is you set aside a little area of land outside the wall and plant there a little bit. You're not even deliberately plant, but you toss some seeds over there, and they just grow wild. And that way, when the wild animals come, they find what to eat, and they're satisfied with that, and they don't bother breaking through into your actual field. So suppose somebody comes and makes a chazaka on that area outside that wall, and even let's say he actually properly works it, he plows it, he plants it, the whole business. Lo yhavi chazaka. Nevertheless, it's not a chazaka. My timer, why is that? Meima oma, because the owner of the field is gonna think to himself, kol d'zara nami aroidi achlele. Okay, why should I bother? Whatever he's gonna plant, the aroidim, the wild donkeys are gonna come and eat anyway. I have no reason to bother being loicha against such a thing.
An aroid is a wild donkey.
There's actually two different aroidim in Shas. There's one kind which means a wild donkey, and the other one is a kind of snake. Pashas over here, we mean the first kind, a wild donkey, but whatever, yeah. The point is, therefore, so that can't be considered a chazaka. Nobody, the other guy is not going to bother making a macha on it. So even if he has possession of it for 3 years, that's not going to be enough to make him a muhzif, even in that area outside, much less in the field itself.
Who's the president of Turkey?
I don't know. Why?
Aroid?
Erdogan.
Erdogan, yeah.
Wild
okay.
Donkey.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. You see him falling off a horse there?
No, okay. Come on. Okay. V'amar Rabbi Yehuda, ochla orla ena chazaka. Also, Rabbi Yehuda says another game. If you ate, if you consumed the produce of the field as that at least one of the years was a year of orla, then it's not a chazaka. Why is that? Again, the Rashbam says, same logic. The owner of the field is going to figure, look, the trees are orla. You anyway can't have hanah from them. Why should I bother? Why should I bother being moicha? That's something that I myself couldn't have had any use out of anyway. That's neither here nor there. We're going to learn later on in the parak one reason behind the concept of a chazaka of 3 years is because that's enough time for him to find out about it and make a machal wherever he is. We're going to talk about Kaddishah. We're going to see it in a couple of blocks.
That was the modern cell phone, 3 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
What's that?
Okay. Tanya Nami Hochi, Ochlo Shvi Orlo Shvias Bikalayim, Ena Chazaka. We learn similarly in a Braisa that if any of the 3 years were Orla or Shmita, where the fruit is all, not Osabana, but you still have regulations, that the fruit is basically Hefker. Or Kalayim, then it's also not a chazaka. The Rashbam points out that Rabbeinu Hananel actually has a girsa, and so do most other Rishonim, not ain a chazaka, but actually have a chazaka, that it is a valid chazaka. And Tosfos points to a Gemara in Ksubas that actually says so, that Ochel or Lashvias Kalayim have a chazaka. So Tosfos explains that we have to be talking about a case where he was able to eat it beheter. Now, how is that? Orla and Kalayim are not beheter. So Tosfos explains, we're talking about, let's say, for example, okay, so you don't have fruit available during the early year, but you have the branches, you have the wood of the trees or whatever. You can chop off the dead branches or whatever and use them for firewood. That would be considered a valid achila during those years. Therefore, if you, so
the branches themselves,
right? The branches themselves are not off. They're as are.
The fruits are also,
yeah. And as far as Kalayim, Tosis points out, what you could have is like this. Let's say, for example, yes, if you were to go and Kalayim is, for example, you have a grain together with grapes, as we learned at the beginning of the Masechta. So let's say, for example, yeah, if you planted grapevines, the Isser, new grain, then yeah, the whole thing is going to become Osir, grapes, vines, the whole everything.
Osir Bahana.
However, if you had a grapevine there before, and then you went and planted grain next to it, or vegetables or whatever next to it, the rule is with Kalaya Kerem, it only becomes Osir if it grew by at least 1/200 greater during the time when it was Kalaya. We learned at the beginning of the Perek what the Yerushalmi says on it. You take a sample of fruit from it, you see how long it takes to dry out, and then based on that, the amount it takes to dry out is considered to be the amount of time it grows, and therefore you divide that by 200, and you know, if you have a fruit, let's say, that takes 100 hours to completely dry out, it means that in a half hour it grows at 100 outside. So, Tosfos says, suppose you have a situation where you had mature grapevines, you went and planted grain next to them, for example. Let's say, for example, that the branches, which grow more slowly, were not hosif echad masayim during that time. The fruit was. Well, then the fruit, the grapes will be also, the branches won't. If now the guy goes ahead and uses the branches, fine, it wasn't be'isser. Same thing with orla, it wasn't be'isser, because the branches of orla trees are not osir. And therefore, it can be a valid chazaka. Yes, the other guy should be moicha. That this is all the use that you can have of it under those things. Because it grew less than 1/200, yeah, so therefore it's multibahana. The Rambam actually doesn't even go through that whole derech. The Rambam says you don't even have to be talking about that. The Rambam also accepts the girsa havya chazaka, but he says flat out it means even if it was full fledged orla, where it really is osir bahana, or even if it's full fledged kalayim, where it's osir bahana, but you went and did it beisur anyway, you the machzit went and did it beisur anyway, that is a valid chazaka. It was an isur. You're going to get malchus for it. Okay, different issue. Nevertheless, it's a valid chazaka, and if the other guy wasn't moicha during those 3 years, then you have a chazaka.
That's halacha, presumably.
That's, yeah. Yeah.
39 lashes later, you get your field.
Yeah. Okay. Omer of Yosef, another din. Ochla shachas lo have a chazaka. Another din. If you consumed the produce of the field as shachas, as unripe plants, as hay, basically. So you planted grain, for example. You didn't wait till it grew fully. You just cut it down when it's still shachas to feed to animals. That's not a chazaka. Why? Because the whole point of a chazaka is you're using the field in the way that the full-fledged owner would. Here, Adarabi, you're showing like I'm a ganav. I'm trying to get whatever I can out of it as fast as possible and get out of here. Therefore, again, the other guy is not going to bother making a macha because you yourself are demonstrating by that you obviously are not the real muchzik in it.
Did we come across this with the 3 year though? Every other year they harvested, that we don't demand that you do 3 consecutive years.
If it's the minhag to do that, yeah. But we're also going to talk about an Omid Beis. We're going to talk about shachas in a different connection. We're going to talk about in connection with Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, Peir Rabba and Peir Zot. Wait.
Okay.
Okay. But yeah, for the time being, so that's the Rashbam uses the expression for 3 years he did shachas, and actually the Rama Parsham will explain. Fine, he only did it for 1 year, maybe that could work. But if he did it for 3 years consecutively, then you can't consider that a chazaka. One of the years, at least, he should have done a normal crop. Okay. Amar Rava, v'ibet savra mechuzah kaima. However, Rava says, if this field is located in the savra mechuzah, savra literally means the neck. The Rashbam translates it as the bikas mechuzah, in the valley of mechuzah. Maybe the valley was shaped like a neck, I don't know. Anyway, if the field is located in savra mechuzah, have a chazakah, then that is considered a valid chazakah. Because they were rich people in mechuzah, as we find throughout Shas. They have lots of animals. So therefore, it was a very common thing to grow a whole field of shachas over there just for animal food. So that can be considered a valid way of using the field. Okay. Another din, Omer of Nachman, tafticha lehavi chazakah. If you have the field as tafticha during those 3 years, then it's not a chazakah. The Rashbam starts by explaining that tafticha is, you have a field that tafticha literally comes from the word pesach, which means open. So Rashbam starts by explaining it means it's an open, it's like open ground. It's full of hollows and splits in the ground and whatever. It's not a normal good quality field. It just produces very 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 poor quality pears. So therefore, again, because it's so low quality, even if somebody is machzik in it, the owner is not going to bother making a machal during those 3 years. Then he quotes from Rabbeinu Chananel that tachticha means normally you would plow a field and then you turn over the earth, you dig it up, and then you make it ready to plant in. What if not? What if you have, you know how sometimes you have when the ground gets wet and then dry soon afterwards and it splits open, you have split open, cracked open areas in it. Let's say you have a field like that. You didn't bother plowing it properly. You just waited until cracks like that developed and then planted in it. Same idea. You're obviously not doing it like the normal way that a balabas uses his field.
And it has to be a real.
It has to be a real that you used it in the normal way. There's a couple of other explanations also, including one of them is you only plowed, you never planted. Again, you know, you plow one year after the other. Actually, we're going to talk about that in the Gemara later. That why would you bother? And the Rambam has apparently yet another explanation of tafticha, that it means you built things in it, like, for example, you built drainage channels or irrigation channels or whatever. Very nice, you're improving the land, but you didn't actually get pears out of it. Abba, therefore, the other guy can figure, why should I bother being mocha? You're improving my field. I may as well, yeah. Another case, apik kura v'ayo kura. What happens if he planted a kur of seed and all he collected was a kur, so he didn't gain anything, there was no profit. Also, I have a chazaka. That's also not considered a chazaka, because again, the other guy can figure I have no reason to even bother being Moshe. So they talk about that this is
off harvest?
So they talk about, the Rishonim talk about, we're not talking about, for example, that we're not talking about, let's say, for example, that for example there was a drought or something and therefore there was a bad year harvest, because then sure, I mean, he would have had the same bad harvest himself, still it should have been Moichane. No, we're talking about that the other guy was very careless in planting the field, such that he didn't even manage to, he's such a yukul that he didn't even manage to produce a proper crop. Well, why should I bother being Moicha? The guy obviously doesn't know what he's doing anyway.
Well, I'd certainly be Moicha. You know, it doesn't help me that he's there. I'll get this yukul out of there.
Okay, but at least
a better squire.
Okay, but fine, but at the very least, though, you can't consider that he should automatically jump to be Moicha. Okay.
He should. I mean,
yeah, okay, but it's still a different kind of thing. They do talk about, though, the Rishonim do talk about, that this apik kura v'ayo kura is talking strictly having to do with the harvest itself, we don't factor in, for example, his expenses. Taxes, for example, a couple of Rishonim point out taxes were so high in their times that if you went according to this, then you'd never have chazaka. Yeah. That's not what we mean.
What do you mean taxes?
Taxes, for sure, the taxes that you had to pay on your real estate taxes, grain taxes, whatever, yeah.
You didn't net anything.
Yeah, you may not have netted anything, but at least from the point of view of the harvest, you netted something. From the point of view of after all your expenses, after you file your taxes for the year, yeah, you may not have a profit. That's not what we're talking about.
But here he's not even grossing the same.
Yeah. Another case, Vahani Dveresh Galusa, as far as the members of the Resh Galusa's household, Loimachtaki Bon Veloimachtakin and Bahu, they cannot make a chazaka against us, and we cannot make a chazaka against them. They can't make a chazaka against us, meaning if one of them comes and takes over, if some of them has possession of a field which previously was known to belong to somebody not from that family, that's not considered a chazaka. They will always have to hold on to their shtar. Why? Because we can say, similar to what we were saying before about the goyim, they're powerful people. The owner, even if there is fears to be moicha on them, therefore the fact that they were there 3 years without a macha is no proof that they validly bought it. V'loy machzikin in behu is that Rashbam says, give two explanations why not. Number one is they're rich people. They have anyway lots of property. Fine. Yeah, I don't mind if you squat there a little while. You improve the place. You plow and plant it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have time to take care of it anyway. And eventually, when the time comes, when the harvest is to be collected or whatever, fine. They can always go. They're powerful people. They can always go and grab it whenever they want to. They don't feel the need to go through the basting system.
The regular might, though, they wouldn't reach them necessarily.
Yes.
You can't expect them to spend the whole day being Micah.
Yes. that, but there's also they figure there's no problem. So I won't be Moshe. We have the power to be able to get what we want anyway, without having to go through the whole. Yeah. Then the Rashbam says another reason is because they're oitzkin b'tzochet zibur, so therefore they don't know. They don't keep track of who's being moicha, of who's being master. Yeah, he says v'loy nehira. He says I don't like that.
That's
yeah.
Just the
yeah.
opposite.
Yeah. Okay.
They should know everything.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe it was somebody from the family of the Rish Kibbutz who came up with that explanation, you know, to compliment them. The public servants, you know, they don't know yet. Yeah. Okay. All right. We said in the mission of Avodim, we said that Avodim are one of the things on which you need a chazakah of 3-4 years. Question is, Avodim, Yeshlem, Chazakah? What do you mean? Is there b'chlal such a thing as a chazakah on Avodim? Avodim Knanim, that is. On Avodim, can you validly say after 3 years that you have a chazakah on a certain Eved? Didn't Rish Lakish say that Goydris, meaning things that can move around freely, the things that can move around freely of their own volition, for example, animals, and for example, Avodim. There's no chazakah because even if, so I have a sheep, for example, it winds up in your house, you don't have the ability to say, I bought it, because I could always say, look, it's a sheep, it wanders around from place to place, it came into your...
When we know that Avodim are acquired through certain means...
They may be acquired through certain means, but Lahora, you would have to keep your shtar. You would have to keep your shtar for all time. Yeah, we're talking about Chazaka Gimel Shonim. That after Gimel Shonim, you can say, I don't need my shtar anymore. Why not? Lahora, fine, you have the Eved is in your property, very nice. Who says I sold him to you or gifted him to you or whatever? He wandered there himself. So Rava says, right, what we mean is, though, you don't have chazaka on them right away. It's true, the very fact that the Eved is in your possession right now doesn't mean anything. But after 3 years, you can't say you should have been moicha during that time. The Eved can go wherever he wants, but within 3 years you should have been moicha to make it clear that you didn't sell it and he just went there on his own volition.
So there is
chazaka. That's the point. That's the answer. So the Rish Lakish is not saying ein lahem chazaka as in there's never chazaka. He just means there's chazaka l'acha gimel shah. Right.
And there would be no equivalent to say beit habal. According to Rabbi Shmuel, he wouldn't disagree with it.
No, because, and the reason is, because the different Rishonim talk about this, the reason is because Avodim is one of the ones that's listed in the Mishnah as the ones that are Oisin Peiris Todir. That an Eved is, so it's like a Sdei Beis HaShochan or whatever. It's something that you can always have enough from, not like a Sdei Beis HaBaal, which sits empty for part of the year, yeah. He argued on Sdei Beis HaBaal, right.
And who had the Eved that used to like to dance in the
That was Reb Nachman, had an Eved called Doru. Okay. So, however, on the other hand, the fact is an Eved is mobile, unlike Tavra. Okay, so wait. First of all, there is a machlokas rishonim on this. Are we saying, therefore, when Rish Lakish started saying hagodris, which in general means anything, animals or avodim that's capable of moving around in tents, when Rava is answering, ein lahem chazaka la'alter, aber yesh lahem chazaka la'acha gimel shanim, does he mean avodim and behemoth, or maybe only one or the other? So the three-way machlokas among the rishonim. Is it that animals are the same as avodim, 3 years? The Rashba says, on the contrary, behemoth, you might have a chazaka of even less than 3 years. Behemoth on metalphalin, fine, but they're goydrus, they wander around. So. So that's actually a point that Achronim bring up in connection with the next piece, where the Gemara is going to talk about a baby Eved, that yes, even though normally you would expect to have, even though normally it's true, an Eved is sold with a shtar, on the other hand, Achronim talk about the idea that in general, with metalphalin, you don't say you need a chazaka of 3 years. Usually the chazaka is whatever is tachas yodesh al adam is considered his. In the case of avodim, even though it's true for many purposes of halacha, avodim are compared to karka and they're bought with a shtar, etc. Still, you can't say that you always you have to have your shtar because the fact of the matter is they're metalkalin, and therefore even before, even with a katan, as the Gemara is going to say, even before 3 years, you can have a chazaka on them. Ah, you don't have a shtar. Okay, but then on the other hand, it's metalkalin. The fact is an evid is metalkalin. You have the ability, you have the ability with metalkalin to hide them, to do whatever you want. That is part of the reason why you have such a strong chazaka on metalkalin, as opposed to karka where you need 3 years. Well, an evid then is the same kind of thing. Okay, so anyway, so you have so many Rishonim say that behemoth, that what we're saying in the end is behemoth are like avodim, you need 3 years. The Rashba says on the contrary, behemoth you don't need 3 years. They're like other metalplin in that regard. What the Rambam holds, there's actually different understandings of what the Rambam holds. One of them is that on the contrary, the Rambam says that on the contrary, Rish Lakish's original statement, Hagodris Einlein Chazaka, still applies to behemoth. Behemoth is never a chazaka on, precisely because they go around from one place to another, and when they're in your property, there's never any raya that they're yours. You would have to have some kind of proof that this animal is yours, independent of chazaka. But in other words, as opposed to regular metalplin, which sit wherever they are, animals are not like that. Amar Rava, im haya katan muto barisa. However, Rava says, if this Eved is a baby who's lying in a crib, yesh le chazak al altar, then you have chazak on it right away. Because then it's not godris, it can't move around on its own. Also, that Ashram points out another point. Muto barisa, no, when he's lying in a crib, when he can't move around on his own. But also that Ashram points out another thing is that you have a concept which we've learned before in Bava Metzia called Dvarim Hasurim Lahashal Lahaskir. You have certain kinds of things which are regularly lent out or rented out. The Rambam holds that the definition of that is things that are specifically made to be rented or lent out, as we learned there. All the other Rishonim disagree with him and say as long as it's something that is commonly lent out or rented out, then that's enough. Anyway, the point is, Avodim, mature Avodim may well be rented out or lent out. Baby Avodim are not.
Right.
Therefore, if it's in your possession, then obviously you have Chazaka on it immediately. So the question is pshita. Well, in that case, it's obvious. It's not godrit, and it's not dvorim asurim la'ashal la'aster. Why would we think otherwise? The answer is lo tzricha de'isla'im. No, but the chiddush of what Rava is saying is that if the baby is there together with his mother, ma'u detema nechush d'ma imei ayalti la'asam. So you would think maybe then in that case his mother maybe brought him in over there. Let's say the mother, for example. So now the mother is goitress. She can move around independently, but also she can have been rented out by her owner. Let's say, for example, one day she came to work, bring your child to work day, and so she brought her baby to where she's going and forgot him there. So maybe it's not a proof that he actually belongs to the person in whose house he is. Kamashmalan, that is the chiddush. Imolay menashia brah, a mother doesn't forget her child. Therefore, if the child is there, we have a very strong proof that he belongs there. She didn't stand forget him over there. Speaking of Goydress, a related case.
Even she's a maidservant.
It's possible the mother can belong to one person and the baby to another. We've had such cases. Actually, what we had yesterday. Right? You can have a case where you sell your shivcha to somebody else, but the baby is owned by the first. I mean, you're not going to separate them. We're not talking about like in the South where they would sell them upriver and downriver, but you know they'd be nearby. But the fact is, they belong to two different people. When the baby gets older, his owner is going to have him work for him. The mother, meanwhile, is going to work for her master. So a related case to this. Hanu is it? We had this in Bava Kama as well. In Bava Metzia. Hanu is it? Da'ochlo chushla ben harja. It happened once that some goat ate chushla in the Hauda. Chushla is peeled barley. So they saw there was this barley lying around over there in the field. There was this lying there to dry out. The goats came in and ate it. Nezek shalom, because it's vishrus anezek. So also mori chushla tafsinu. Well, now the problem is there were no edim how much was actually eaten. So the owner of the barley came and grabbed a hold of the animal, the Havakatoin Tuva, and he was claiming that they ate a lot. He was claiming that they ate even more than they themselves are worth. So therefore, he wanted to take the animals in payment for it, yeah? Amar Avur Shmuel Yochel Litin Akedei Demei. So Avur Shmuel says all he can validly claim is up to the value of the goats themselves. He has a migui on that. He could have said Lekuchen Hen Biyadi, I bought them. Therefore, as a migui, we allow him with the migui that he can instead say that they ate. Why not? Because then he doesn't have a migui, so he doesn't have a migui for the rest. He doesn't have a migui for the rest in the absence of any aid. Up to the value of the goats, he has a migui because he could have said, I bought them. So the question is, why? What happened to this din of agodrus ein lahen chazaka? Just because he has the animals in his possession doesn't automatically make them his, because they could have just wandered in there, as in fact they did. But the question is, we're giving him a migui that he can collect his nezek on the basis that he could have sent the kuchen and biyadi, but why? Why should the other guy have the ability to claim? You didn't buy them. They wandered into your property. And you don't have any proof whether they ate a little or a lot. Therefore, I should only be obligated to pay a small amount.
So
that's the question. The answer is, shiny izi demesira leroya. It's different when it comes to goats. It's true, goats are goydris. They move around freely. But they are usually given to a shepherd to take care of. The Rashbam uses the expression, they're stranger than rams and sheep. I'm not sure what he means by stranger. Maybe they're wilder or whatever. I don't know. Whatever it is. So, I guess it must be, because he continues. You can't just hold on to them on the way. So, therefore, you usually give them over to a shepherd. Therefore, there is a valid chazaka. Because they didn't just wander in there by themselves. They would have to have gone there with the shepherd.
So then you have to find the shepherd.
But the point is, in other words, that therefore I bought these animals. They're on my possession. They're on my property. The shepherd came and brought them over here and then left. He went to Medina. So I'm not my problem where he is right now. But I have the ability to say the koch and the adi. They can't have just wandered over here by themselves because nobody left. Their goats wander around by themselves. Problem is, what about though? You have the morning and the evening. When you have goats, the shepherd doesn't come to your house to pick up the goats and then come at the end of the day and drop them off. You send the goats and they walk over on their own to the shepherd's house. He takes care of them for the whole day. At the end of the day, he brings them back to his house, and from there they make their own way back to their individual owner's house.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. So therefore, so you have a period of time when they're wandering around on their own. The answer is, yes, but in Nahauda, there are a lot of tayoil. There are a lot of tayoil, which means Arabs, and specifically the Rashbam says Arabs who are ganov. Therefore, in Nahauda, unlike other places, they actually would hand it over hand to hand. They wouldn't have this thing where the goats just go on their own from the house to the shepherd's house and vice versa, because they're afraid the Arabs are going to steal them. Therefore, in Nahauda specifically, there's no possibility that the goats wandered around on their own. Therefore, you have the ability to claim that you actually bought them. You have that migri. Otherwise, they would be considered goydrit, and you wouldn't be able to, any place else outside of Nahauda, you wouldn't be able to. Any place where there's that kind of concern, and therefore you don't let the animals go around freely on their own. And the same thing would apply to any other kind of animal if it's the kind of place where you don't let them go by themselves. You know, I imagine, for example, nowadays, anybody who keeps animals, probably keeps them under close control, and therefore not. I don't know. Therefore, none of that. Pets, let's say, or dogs, let's say, for. Okay. All right. Done on that. All right. Okay. All right. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shmuel is Shlosha Chadashim. We said that Rabbi Shmuel had said in the case of a Sdei Beis Abal, a field which where the crops grow on rainwater, and therefore you only have one harvest per year. Then Rabbi Shmuel says you don't need full 3 years. All you need, he said, is 18 months. 3 at the beginning, 1 year in the middle, and 3 months at the end. And then we had Rabbi Akiva who's saying all you need is 1 month at the beginning, a year in the middle, and 1 month at the end. So the question is, layman near it could be not. What's the underlying machlokes? Should we say that the underlying machlokes, you know, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, is about the question of plowing? Did Rabbi Shmuel sava near lay have a chazaka? Maybe Rabbi Shmuel holds that just plowing the field itself is not enough to make a chazaka. You need actual crops growing. Therefore, you need 3 months because three crops is enough for three months is enough for certain kinds of crops to grow fully.
Near
means plowing. Rabbi Akiva Sava near Havi Chazaka, whereas you could argue maybe Rabbi Akiva holds just plowing the field itself is enough of a Chazaka, not just plowing by itself. We said before it's not enough, but the fact that you have one whole year in between where you have one thing of plowing at the beginning. Then you have an entire year where you went through the entire agricultural cycle. And then 1 month at the end where you did one more plowing at the end, preparing for next year, that should be enough according to Rabbi Akiva. The problem with that is, how could you think that? If you're going to go like that, then according to Rabbi Akiva, why would you even need a month at the beginning and at the end? After the Yom HaChanami, all you need is one day at the beginning and at the end. That's enough time to plow. Ella dekula alma nulei habachazaka. No, we have to say that both Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Akiva agree that just plowing by itself is not considered a chazaka. It can't count towards any of the 3 years. V'hocha peter rabo peter zuta ikid benayim. Rather, the machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva has to do with big peiros versus small peiros. So, what does that mean? The Rashbam explains, peiros rabba means you have to have enough time for the produce to grow completely. Now, not all produce can grow in 3 months, but at least there are certain crops. For example, he says barley, oats, lentils, that 3 months is enough for them to fully grow. Therefore, it's enough to have 3 months. Barley has a shorter growth cycle than wheat. So therefore, wheat takes 5-6 months. Barley takes about 3 months. But you need peira rabba. But you need peira rabba. At least you need enough time for some kind of important crop such as those to grow. Less than that, you can't consider it chazak.
3 months.
Rabbi Akiva would hold peira zuta is enough. For example, what we talked about on Amud Aleph, shachat. We said, for example, about where you don't let the grain grow fully. You only grow until it develops stalks, and then you cut it down and feed it to animals. That's enough. Or the Rashbam says another possibility. You have certain kinds of vegetables that take only a month to grow. Pasta, for example, is right. So different Mephoshim talk about what we would say as far as aspasta. But there is, for example, so we talked about over there, for example, if it's a field that's specifically made for aspasta, that might be different. Here we're talking about a field that's not usually used for growing aspasta or shachas or whatever, so Rabbi Shmuel would not consider it sufficient.
The important thing is, even if it's a month, they need a month, that's fine, but Rabbi Akiva would say partial growth is enough.
Partial growth, no, right. That depends on the two explanations of the Rashbam. According to the second explanation of the Rashbam, he would agree you need a complete growth. He would just say it's enough to have grown vegetables, even though vegetables are less important than grain or whatever. The two explanations. Peira zuta can either mean a partial growth of an important crop, such as barley or whatever, or it can mean a full growth of a less important crop, like vegetables.
It means both things.
The Rashbam gives two different explanations. So it's either one or the other. It's either one or the other. It's either one or the other. Yeah.
This pasta is a complete crop of 3 months,
but you could have three crops within three because you cut off the tips of it every 10 days.
So we said 3 months, and you have 3 months.
Right. Well, no, we said actually 3 months is enough because each month they have pasta
growth.
The first one grows. The first, the each crop of pasta grows in a month. Yeah.
But it could be harvested 3 times.
Right.